You jumped
my claim?
I had a dream that I did that the other night. It felt pretty good, so I tried it in real life. Felt pretty good here, too.
Really? I think it was going to go that well for you. Welcome to the Film Vault, everyone. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Top 5 rich characters. Top 5 wealthy rich characters.
How do you feel about rich people, Brian?
Hope to be one someday.
See, that's the difference between you and I.
I didn't think you were going to identify with that.
That's the difference between
you and I. What was your criteria for the list, Anderson? Mine was they had to have a lot of money.
Yeah.
The end.
There's so many different ways to go about this. So we could have come up, like, we could have done research and we would have had the exact same 5 on our list, I guess, if we actually did the research appropriately.
Turns out there's a lot of...
And we would have the richest... You and I would have the top 5 richest people ever presented in film.
Correct. Mine are not the 5 richest. They're the 5... I left out many obvious ones that I hope are represented on the listeners list for a chance to talk about some lesser talked about characters and or movies.
I came up with people that I thought of as rich.
Okay.
Where like that's kind of the main characteristic of them. And they started out rich, like when pen met paper and whoever wrote these scripts was thinking about these characters. It's not a rags to riches story. Or vice versa.
Okay.
All right. It's not because that becomes like the story is more about an arc of becoming rich rather than being rich. You know,
Wolf of Wall Street, for example.
He was already rich, right?
He started off penny trading.
I say that because the movie starts off with him already rich, right? And then it goes back and forth in time a little bit. Yeah, he actually could have been on the list, but that movie annoys me because it's white men behaving badly for two
we
and
a
half
lot
hours.
Of white men behaving badly then.
But like my number one
diverse.
My number one, I got from many different places on the calendar as well, Brian.
Many different places on the globe for me. Yes, as well as the calendar. Mine span the 1960s to today.
I got 50s to 2013.
How about that?
But yeah, I came up with the fun characters. Characters that are driven by their money, by their wealth. They identify with their wealth. And you know, my number one could be a little controversial, and I feel a little bit like you, which is never a good thing in my number one, because he has very little amount of screen time. No dialogue.
Interesting. What?
But he is the epitome of a rich character.
You got clever?
I didn't get clever, though. I kept going back
dialogue.
To him. This guy was number 5 at one point, and then he found his way
he
to
ascended.
One. As I was looking at all the others, I'm like, this man embodies money and power.
Any females?
And he's got the jowls. No. Jowls is what I said. No females, and that's not my fault. I did not write movies for the last 120 years, all right? This is not my fault that rich women are not really portrayed.
Did you?
There was a couple, but they didn't make my list.
Not nearly as much as the rich. Speaking of, I was about to mention a tropes, TVTropes.com, one of my favorite websites, .org.com. Either way, TV Tropes has many listings for different archetypes of rich men. So we will explore some of those.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it so heavily favoring the women. I mean, the men, and it's funny when we do these lists and we do our research. Mm-hmm. It does things like that do get exposed. Where you know, I don't think people
we're exposing the hypocrisy in cinema history.
Yeah, I don't know how many times you know people are spending 4 or 5 days plus when they have spare time thinking of rich characters in movies. You know, and spending a few hours or more researching it and unearthing what's actually out there. So I'm very interested to hear what the listeners have too.
Because
I hope that there's a couple that eluded me, Brian.
You have 0 women. Any money-grubbing Jews?
I don't know if they're Jewish or not, Brian.
Well, some characters are obviously Jewish.
Please expose those when you're doing yours, okay? Because I don't know how you would discern.
Because the last name?
Unless, what?
Oh, was like, okay. This was like a... Like
I don't even know if I have last names on all these guys. It felt weird just saying guys. Just but they are. They're all guys. Hey, speaking of rich...
Hey.
I feel... Not rich at all, but I feel rich in the heart.
Why is that?
Because of the opportunity that the listeners, many of which listen to this program, gave me, bestowed upon me to make a feature film,
indeed.
Which I am knee-deep in prepping for.
Pre-production.
And, there's not a day that goes by since the Groupers campaign concluded in November that I'm not exceptionally thankful and very, very happy and excited and you no idea and nervous and terrified at the same time of letting anyone down. That's the last thing I want to do. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I can't tell you guys how much I appreciate all the support that I got. And I just did casting the last couple of days. I saw over 50 people out of like about 1,600 applicants now for these 8 roles. And I saw some really great performances and some people that I'm very excited to possibly work with. And things are coming along.
That's exciting. I'm
so thankful that this is something that I can finally do and figure out if I, you know, should make a movie.
And well, you have to now.
Should make another one possibly. You know, as long as I can figure out if I have the chops to move on and make another one. You know, it's kind of a stick. What do you call it?
A measuring stick?
The
high water mark?
The last thing I wanted, guys, was to get to like, you know, guys and girls, to get to like 60, Rich 70 guys. Years old and just still not. In fact, one of the scripts that I wrote, Brian, I haven't really talked about it much here on the show, but it was actually like a living nightmare of my own future.
Really?
And it's about a 65-year-old man who sues his boss and then takes that money that after suing his boss to make a movie about what an asshole his boss is.
Wow.
But he's a 65-year-old man. Yeah, who's just, he didn't really do anything with his life and he was very upset. He's always worked for other people and he's always been part of the, like, one of the cogs in the machine.
Yeah.
And he's a very mild-mannered, quiet man, never really stood up for himself. And then he even though he hates lawyers and lawsuits more than anything, he sees an opportunity. He's like, you know what, I gotta just do this.
Right.
And he makes a movie about it, his boss, and it's a fun movie. It's probably my most heartfelt script that I've written.
Sounds like it.
But that came from the heart because I saw that as being my future.
That's it's like the Ghost of Christmas Future for you.
It was. I wrote it from a real terror-ridden place. So I just want to thank everybody again who was a part of it or who might be a part of it in the future as we move forward and the movie becomes available.
Would you like some real paper?
Yeah,
what appears to be, what is that?
This was I have a shoebox in my trunk.
It's amazing.
And I with new shoes. I've not worn them yet. Oh. I haven't even had taken time to take them out of the trunk. They've been in there for 2 weeks now. And I was looking for some parchment, Brian, to take some last minute notes on.
And
I have a ritual
are.
That I do before the show. Every I go to the same place every week.
No phone. No.
I don't
no,
like
no
to type phone? On the phone. Yeah, I like to.
I understand that.
So I found some of this tissue that was in the shoebox. I wrote down some last minute notes.
Tissue. Careful, it crumples easily.
All right, let's go up. Let's do it.
Let's flick fast. The films we've seen in the last week. We'll talk about the films we've seen in the past 7 days. You go first. Unless you want me to go.
Why don't we both start with the movie we both saw?
The film. Oh, yes, we should point out that what did I sign? And then it all went haywire because it was in.
Yeah, you assigned I am not your Negro. And I was under the impression that I had a. Is everyone having to suffer through that horrific sound? I was under the impression that I had a screening link for it, and it was for that it had already been released. I didn't realize that the release date was, and I was not able to share those links with you, unfortunately. So I covered "I'm Not Your Negro" on CinemaDix. That's a whole different thing. But over there on Cinematix, we talked about "I Am Not Your Negro." Instead, Brian played ball, and he assigned Logan and I 20th Century Women, which
we are now
going to dissect. And not spend too much time on, probably.
Written and directed by Mike Mills, starring Annette Bening, Lucas Jade Zuman, Greta Gerwig, Elle Fanning, and Billy Crudup.
I didn't get a chance to go to the theater.
Brian got to assign us both a movie because he hit the number on the head.
I did.
44%.
Didn't it drop significantly? Like, it wasn't in the 80s?
Not important.
Oh, sorry.
So you kindly did us a favor, at least me a favor, in 20th Century Woman. A movie that I had to knock out anyways. I had to get out of the way.
Sure.
And here we go. Let's
talk
about it.
For Best Original Screenplay.
Right.
Sitting at Rotten Tomatoes at a cool 89%.
89.
What'd you think? Logan, what'd you think?
He did not see. 20th Century Woman. I did not care for this film.
Really?
Yeah. Are you surprised by that?
I thought you would have found some things in it you liked. I didn't love it, but no. There were parts of it that I enjoyed.
Here's what 20th Century Women is. And I didn't even do any research. I'm talking completely off of guesses that I'm very, very confident in.
Okay.
Mike Mills. I've never seen any of his movies before. I'm familiar with the name, but I've not seen his movies. I've not seen his body of work. Okay.
Right.
It's a man who had a colorful childhood, and he wrote a script about it.
Right.
And it's about his childhood.
Sort of polar bear-esque in the sort of time period.
A little bit like
dealing with a difficult parent.
Kind of.
In the grand scheme, it's just very dissimilar.
A little bit like Almost Famous. So coming of age.
I thought it was very similar to
White Oleander as well.
Captain Fantastic, at least for the first part, because you have the parent, the single parent that's raising their child in a very unconventional way.
Santa Barbara, 1979, and he is the center is around a multitude of characters, but it's namely the young boy who you have to imagine is a young Mike Mills. I did the math, and his age works out to this. He's got a single mom that Brian alluded to, and there's a couple roommates that live in this big house that's being restored that they live in, because it's kind of like hippy dippy days still.
It's also
the tail end of the 70s.
It's a college town. She's renting it out to Elle Fanning, who I believe is in college, and I think
she's not renting it out to Elle Fanning. Elle Fanning is a friend of his that he grew up with, that he's attracted to,
but
and she comes over and she sleeps in his bed secretly, but does not have sex with him.
Good call.
And then Greta Gerwig, she has red hair. She's actually doing Greta, a different version of Greta Gerwig that I've not seen before. I really like Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
She's great. She's like a troubled artist who's living in one of the rooms. And then Billy Crudup is like the old handyman who's hanging around.
Bang,
who's kind
everyone.
Of a free spirit. Mm-hmm. And he's not, you might be thinking Matthew McConaughey from Dazed and Confused,
no.
But he's much more quiet and demure and keeps to himself, but he's still desirable by the ladies. Here's the problem.
He's still Billy Crudup.
And then Annette Bening, who's up for awards for this, she is the mom, and she's the central the leader of the whole house.
Sure,
she is the what do you call it? matriarch.
Yeah, there you go.
Here's the problem, and all of them have a voice, and they all get to narrate their own little stories.
That's true.
At one point or another,
different points of view.
So it's a character-driven movie.
Yes, it's very much character study. There's really no plot.
Filled out with mildly interesting characters. Mildly interesting.
They're interesting to different degrees. I'll give you that.
I didn't really care much for any of their stories. Mm-hmm. It was directed with zest, and it had style, and it.
There were
moved
moments
along.
I loved
pretty
the dinner table scene towards the end was fantastic.
I can't even remember.
Oh, really? There was a frank discussion about sex.
Oh yeah, that seemed a little bit like we're having a moment. This is a moment in this movie that people are going to remember.
I thought it was nice, but what are you going to do?
I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. It was no Osage County, but it was another one of these very underwhelming movies, and it felt self-indulgent, and I wish that his life was a little bit more interesting growing up, I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
There needed to be more conflict. There wasn't much conflict.
Yeah, this is a very typical 3-star movie for me. This is good. I can say definitively this is a good movie. I don't know that I want to revisit it or that I even highly recommend it to anyone, but it's fun.
It had its moments, and you know, it's one of these movies that I was very happy when it was over because I was kind of watching my clock and I was getting a little bit bored. But now that it's over and it's done, it's in my head. And those characters, you know, I'm going to remember most of them. And it's kind of like a little slice of life from a different time, from a bygone era. But I found myself doing this a lot, Brian, because it is a period piece. You know, they're on the beach.
Yeah,
and
it's all female characters.
And it's Santa Barbara. And my eye is trained on Main Street, which is or State Street, which is kind of adjacent to the beach. And I'm just watching like SUVs drive by, modern cars.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm watching.
Really? Oh, wow. That's
what
funny.
I'm watching instead of actually what's going on the beach, because I really didn't
Your
care.
Your mind wandered.
I hate to say it, but I just didn't really care. Yeah. Like I understand, you know, having like the wherewithal to write about what you know and your own upbringing and whatnot, but it might have been a more interesting book.
Yeah, I think I liked it a little more than
just
you. It sounds
like, who
like
cares?
But we're both sort of saying the same thing, which is fine, nothing remarkable.
All right, you have 3 movies too.
That was one of my 3.
Okay, I saw another one up for awards, and fuck, was I concerned about watching Florence Foster Jenkins.
Been putting it off.
Have you seen the poster for this?
Of course.
Think most people have.
I've seen trailers.
The poster makes you just want to like go, maybe I just quit the show. Maybe I just don't care about movies anymore.
I'm hoping that it's a very fun, lighthearted romp.
If I have to watch that movie, it just, you know, it's made for old white people, and I'm not that old.
yeah.
Turns out it's lovely, and it's a fantastic little romp.
I'm very glad to hear
this. This is a movie directed by Stephen Frears, who's very capable. Yes, he's a little bit dated now, but Philomena is probably his last big hit. He also did High Fidelity, which the show is kind of based on. And it's about a true life story of Florence Foster Jenkins. Speaking of rich, holy shit, she could have made the list. She is a real life character. She's very rich, very wealthy. We learned that she inherited her money from her father. And it's like 1940s. I want to say New York. Yeah, New York. And there's some really great period piece stuff. Where
it's World War II era,
they
right?
follow.
Yeah,
World War II era. You got to do it for the boys. Simon Helberg, who you might know from 30. No, not 30. What's the name of the Big Bang Theory, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. He was very good as a piano player. Follows him out from this interview, and we're on the street. I still don't, it must have been CGI, but it was this really impressive shot where like the crane comes up and you can see like deep into like Manhattan, all these cars, and it just keeps going and it looks real as fuck. This is like what Fences needed. Fences tried to do a little bit of that, but it just didn't feel like it was of the era. It felt really self-contained and like it was a play with a little bit of budget that goes a little bit beyond the stage. It was, that's a whole other thing. But this is a true life story about this woman who has all the money in the world, and she's married to this man named Hugh Grant. Or
wow, convenient.
St. Clair.
Stunt casting.
Bayfield, who does that thing where I think it happens a lot in Hollywood and with people of means, they surround themselves with people who tell them what they want to hear and shield them from the truth and keep them in this little bubble. And
sure, especially if you have money.
Little
people
bubble.
Want to be, people want to be around that.
That she's in, and she loves the arts and she loves music. And there's a real life record that's out there that came from the actual Florence Foster Jenkins from this time where she is singing opera, and it became kind of like a quasi hit, almost like the first, like, almost like a viral type Gangnam Style, where everyone was laughing at it.
Did you recognize the song?
No, I never heard it. Now, if I had heard of this song, I was familiar with the track and familiar with the actual record and had heard it before and knew that they were making a movie about this actual thing. The record actually is what led to the movie. I'd be really excited about this movie coming out. I'd be like, I can't wait to see that story. So what it is this, right? She loves the arts. She gives all sorts of money to all sorts of people all over the place in New York for supporting the arts, right?
And she's a philanthropist.
Yeah. And she wants to so badly be a part of it. And she's a good soul. She's a quiet lady. And she's well, good-hearted, played by Meryl Streep, up for an Academy Award. And she wants to be an opera singer. So she has a coach who's, like, lying to her, telling her how good she is.
She wants to keep getting paid for the lessons.
And then Hugh Grant, you know, her husband, who doesn't sleep with her for unknown reasons. We find out later why he doesn't. But she's ill. We get that. Okay. And he's shielding her from the reality that she's a terrible singer. And then she has like a concert and they have to fill like 1,000 seats. And he just goes out and he just buys everybody. And he just pays everybody to come see the show and tell her how great, including critics and whatnot. So
really
she
really do have money.
Then she reads the papers the next day and she's like, you know, just reading all these accolades. And she really believes that she's good until she makes a record. She goes into one of these little places on the street and she actually has a record pressed. And she... And that's about as far as I'll go, but that's how she became the sensation that she is. And it's very sweet. It's funny. It's cute. I want to spend money on it, especially our audience. I don't think that they would really, unless you really want to be completist. But once this thing's streaming or if you can send right away now. Or if you can go down the street and see it in the theater, you could do worse. It's a good little story.
It just arrived for me. I'm still getting the Netflix discs. It just arrived yesterday, so I'll be watching in the next couple of days.
It's very interesting. Okay. It's very interesting.
So if anyone wants to come over and watch
it's a phenomenon that happens all too often. And Michael Jackson, I remember years ago, I'm sure there's YouTube clips of it, but he was like on the MTV stage and they brought out some kind of cake or something. And it was like they weren't even giving him an award, but like the cake had like a cake topper, and he thought that it was an award because he's so used to getting awards. So he went over and he took it off the cake, and it wasn't even for him. And he's like, "Thank you," and he's thanking everyone for his award, but it wasn't. He was all confused.
He's getting handed things.
I heard that like he had a mantle with all of his awards, and that was actually up there amongst them with like cake frosting.
That's pretty great.
And nobody had the balls to tell him, "Hey, look, that's not an award. That was a mistake." So, yeah, there's a lot of that that goes on, and it's very interesting to see this true-life case. And they show not only real-life pictures of the woman at the end, but they show they actually play us the actual track, the record.
Ah,
and
that's like a even better version of what you like.
Yeah, it's great. So you get to hear it. And Meryl, you know, can she do any wrong? She's almost always great, right?
It's rare when a performance of hers doesn't end up with a nomination for Best Actress or Best Actress.
Oh, she did Ricky in the Heartbreakers.
That's
whatever.
Pretty rare.
I didn't see that. But no, she does a great job at singing poorly. Okay. They do this thing at the end.
Good Brian, job.
And I'm not giving anything away, really, but there's like a dream sequence where Meryl Streep is singing opera, and she's singing really good. Mm. And I'm like, it just felt like, oh, they just shoehorned this in to prove that she could sing good as Meryl Streep if she wanted to.
Yeah.
Really? It felt a little forced.
Yeah.
It's a cute movie, though.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll see it. I have no choice now. It's at my house.
Well, you don't have to see it. There's plenty of things in your house.
A film you've been haranguing me to see for quite some time.
Oh.
It's about a ridge. Hacksaw Ridge.
I've not been haranguing you to see it.
You keep asking me. You've asked me on the weekly basis for the last month.
Because I was waiting for you so I could talk about it on this show. But
people, especially on the old Red Edit over there, are very critical of us whispering titles. But I don't feel like we whisper titles.
Yeah, I'm about once every 2 weeks. I don't remember ever whispering a title. Saying, we're sick of your dramatic bullshit. Stop whispering. It's not funny. It's not cute. I'm like, I don't even know I'm doing it. I'm sorry.
Hey.
Hacksaw Ridge.
Fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. Hacksaw Ridge. Hacksaw.
He just said "fuck yourself" Ridge. For anyone who might not have heard, and it wasn't that good.
It wasn't that funny. I whispered it though.
Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge.
You know what we should do? We should talk about the listeners like this. Yes. Every now and again, we should be like, "What the fuck was the listeners?" Hey,
not you, what? Not you. If you can hear that, not you.
Go ahead.
Directed by Mel Gibson. Melly Mel. starring Andrew Garfield, Sam Worthington, Vince Vaughn, Hugo Weaving. Nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor.
Yes.
Sitting at 87% on the old Rotten Tomatoes.
Way too high.
Way too. This is basically a much less funny version of Forrest Gump.
Kind of.
This
it does definitely has Forrest Gump flavor all over it.
The main character, played by Andrew Garfield, Private Doss, he is extremely hard not to laugh at, Anderson. He is unintentionally hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Simple would be a nice way to describe him. Cartoonishly yokel would be another. He's a cartoonish yokel. He is... Listen, it's very easy for us, homo elitists on the coast to make fun of, Southerners.
Homo elitist?
Well, you know what I'm saying. Like, it's easy.
Right, I just don't want you to be mistaken for like being homophobic over there.
No, I'm trying to get both angles. I'm going to get the left and the right upset of me right now.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But
you actually were saying homo.
Yes,
Brian.
But what I'm saying is, this character is he's like Cletus.
He's simple.
He's like Cletus.
He's not as bad as
he's
Cletus.
An archetype. He's a trope.
He's an archetype.
He's a walking trope.
He likes his Bible. He likes his Jesus, and he. He had one thing happen to him in childhood, which made him change his ways forever.
Oh, boy.
Which is how things work, right?
That's exactly how it
you
works.
Have one traumatic experience, yeah. And forever you will
forever
never...
Forever you never touch a weapon.
Yes. Yeah. But you will join the military.
But you will join the military.
This is based on a true story, so let's be careful of just how much fun we make of it.
So this is a very, very, very...
loose interpretation.
Very melodramatic film. Melodrama abounds. The courtroom scene is excruciating. It is... nothing out of reality. It is just, it might as well be a children's story.
You know, I have not really talked with anyone about this movie.
Okay.
And I've kind of been in my own little prism seeing.
Everyone's a trope. Hugo Weaving's the drunk dad who's in the military guy. I don't want my son to grow.
I didn't hear that last part.
That's how it
but went. I've just been watching, the numbers go up on Rotten Tomatoes. I've been watching the awards rack up and I'm kind of confused. So it's nice to hear somebody, even if it's you, talk badly about it.
Okay. In Basic Training, every character in this movie, not just his family, Hugo Weaving, every character in Basic Training is a tropey stereotype.
Right.
He walks into Basic Training.
Well, what that is? That's pandering to a wide audience is what that is, which, whatever.
I don't know, man. You can
you
write characters
understand.
Nuance.
No, he wanted success with this one because you got to understand where Mel is. Mel's like... apology tour.
But there's like a tough guy in his platoon or in his basic training group named from Boston. His name is Smitty. Smitty, yeah. From Boston. There's a guy from Texas who he meets who's literally twirling a lasso. He's literally twirling a lasso.
Yeah, but
the fuck?
That
it's
probably
like,
happened.
It's just like saying, hey, there's a new guy coming in. Everyone act like where you're from. Hey, Texas guy, give me a lasso. So bad.
You're right. I was trying to do the contrarian thing, but I can't even do
Vince
it.
Vaughn is like the... Okay, so maybe I don't know enough about how the military worked back then.
Vince Vaughn was so poorly cast.
Yeah. I have... Poor Vince Vaughn just seems so poorly cast. That's my note right there. Was it... So he's the drill sergeant, but then he shows up like with their platoon in Japan or Korea or wherever they are.
Which doesn't happen.
That's my question. Like, was it common back then for the drill sergeant to all of a sudden go overseas?
I guess it probably happened before we get a bunch of emails. It probably happened here and there. But for the most part, like they would stay.
They would train
a bunch of guys and then send them
and
out.
Train the next batch.
Unless, I could see maybe they all got called out at the same time.
So I'm thinking to myself... Literally, as I'm watching, I'm like, has Mel gone soft on us? Is this Mel Gibson doing?
Wait,
then there's a turn.
Yes,
then
that
it is literally blood and guts. It is
Did you get this? I was laughing actually, because I can honestly say I think the best, most impressive, most visceral reaction
I also
I've
wrote
given,
down visceral.
12, probably about 12 minutes. It's a guess, but that 12 minute when that guy opens his mouth and like a gunshot comes from behind his neck through his mouth and it all begins, and it's just Mel like turning into the Hulk, just like finally letting go, going, oh yeah,
Mel smash. Oh.
It's like he's finally just giving in to like what he wanted to do because it was an apology tour up until then, but it was. That 12 minutes is the best 12 minutes I've spent in the theater all year.
Yeah, it was.
It was a fucking ride. It was so goddamn impressive.
It felt gratuitous to the yes. Yeah, he released some.
Back.
He released some real blue ball action right there. It felt pent up. It felt like it was pent up and ready to burst. I will say that at certain points it felt kind of gratuitous to the point of almost being funny, but it was really well done filmmaking.
The first sequence, and then it slows down a little bit, but then it kind of becomes old hat, and it becomes the same thing over and over.
It just becomes
him chasing this fucking Bible around trenches.
Right.
And you're to the point where, like, dude, you're risking your fellow soldiers' lives for your little fucking Bible.
About 35 minutes of really great stuff from about the halfway point to the three quarters point.
I'm gonna say 15 minutes. There's 15 minutes of fucking phenomenal filmmaking in here.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of other shit that you've seen before but it's not like they just set out and didn't really think about this. Think about what they're doing. This is an apology tour. He wanted to do his own thing, and he also wanted to get as many asses in the seats.
I can't believe the critics are
falling for it, and I can't believe the Academy's falling for it.
Yeah, it's a pretty silly film outside of those amazing battle sequences.
And the battle sequences is not usually what gets you nominations, especially when they're as horrific and as violent as Mel does them.
Way over the top. His head's exploding.
God, doesn't it make you want Mel to get one Star Wars? Just give him one. Give the guy one Star Wars. Oh, my fuck. Oh, my fuck. It'd be great.
So anyway, Hacksaw Ridge, if you can find it for a couple bucks, there's some good stuff to be mined out of here, but don't expect a great movie wall to wall.
It was the most melodramatic film I had seen in the last 12 months until Brian had me watch Cinderella Man. And I'm like, oh, wait, this is actually more melodramatic.
How dare you? Cinderella Man, better movie than this.
And you know what? We speak loosely about this because neither one of us is exceptionally religious. And I'm sure that if you're the religious persuasion, especially if you're a Seventh-day Adventist, which actually I have some family members that are, this is your movie. You're going to really enjoy it from beginning to end.
Oh, yeah. And let me point out, too, one thing I probably brought this up before, but one of the first lessons they taught me in my writing classes were just the excuse of, but it actually happened.
Right.
Is never an excuse. The writing has to be good enough to justify something that actually happened. And this whole story actually happened, but so much of the writing is so ham-handed and melodramatic that, but it actually happened, is not an excuse. Like, you need to make it believable, or you need to buy in. Like, and if you're not buying in, then whether it happened or not is completely moot. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I waxed a little bit.
All right.
All right, next movie.
Enough about Hacksaw. Isn't it crazy?
Waxaw Ridge.
Isn't it fucking insane? That's up for Best Picture.
We're going to look back on movies that really benefited from when they expanded from 5 to up to 10, and this is definitely one of them.
What am I doing here?
What are you doing?
Oh, I got a good one. All right, everybody. It's not that easy. It's not that easily accessible, okay. But
Anderson has a link. He can email you.
It's not true. No, it's not that easily accessible because you got to have HBO Go. Maybe you got the HBO through the old Amazon over there. Through the Amazon Prime, right. Instant Prime. I know they have some deals where you can get it for 30 days for free. I think that's what I have now because I was shocked when I was looking for it. And actually, I'm like, oh, honey, we got access to it. Let's do it. Slender Man. What do you know about Slender Man there, buddy?
Someone tweeted me and said it wasn't good.
Oh, really?
But that's all I know. It was a random person.
Said it wasn't
good. Have you seen Slender Man? Yeah, it's no good.
What?
I think it's what they said.
That'd be a weird thing to say.
Okay.
Do you know what Slender Man is?
No.
Have you ever heard of Slender Man?
I know the hairy man.
Okay, Martyrs. Remember Martyrs?
Of course.
That director made a movie called The Tall Man, I think it was called. And it was his follow-up. I was very excited. Went to see it. Mm-hmm. And it was obviously just, I think I reviewed it on the show, and I called it just a cheap attempt to glorify the Slender Man. And I don't know. I think I probably first heard about Slender Man from camp. It's kind of a kid's thing. He's the modern-day boogeyman. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure, that Logan's familiar with Slender Man. You're a Slender Man guy, right?
I'm familiar with the documentary you're about to talk to about.
Oh, but you never heard of Slender Man before? They kept talking about the Slender Man is so. Now I feel like I'm a hipster and I'm trying to be like, oh, yeah, never. No, I feel like they were trying to make too much of the fact that adults didn't know about Slender Man, and I thought that everyone did, but maybe it's because I do that camp every summer.
Okay, right, that's probably.
Anyways,
how I'll do it.
About a year or so ago, I remember my wife telling me that she just read a big article about these two 12-year-old girls that stabbed one of their best friends multiple times in honor of Slender Man. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And here we go. Just like I like it.
Here we go.
I could have researched this. I could have read a bunch of articles and come to my own conclusions. What do I do? I sit back and I wait 18 months for it to be delivered in a tight little package called Beware the Slender Man. Beware the Slender Man is a documentary that not only gives you a ton of shit on Slender Man, which is a modern day boogeyman. Okay. Right?
And this is on HBO Go or on HBO.
Yeah. Okay. Which, you know, I kind of talked about a little bit, which children are terrified of. He's a tall, faceless man, and he has tentacles that comes out of his back, and he's everywhere, but he's nowhere at the same time, and he takes children. Okay. And in this documentary, they kind of relate him to the boogeyman as well as the Pied Piper. Okay. And
just to clear it up, I have two people tweeted me. One asked just simply, seen Beyond Slender Man yet? And the other one said, have you watched Beware of the Slender Man yet? Found it way too long, too much filler. Again, well,
first
I not,
of all, they
mis-
said the word, the name of the movie. It's Beware, not okay, Beware. Beware of the Slender Man. Okay. I found it fascinating. So the story in itself, without the Slender Man backdrop, if just for unknown reasons, these three little 12-year-old girls are out in some woods in where the hell were they? Out in like rural Wisconsin. I think they were Wisconsin.
Okay.
And one of them got stabbed multiple times by one of the by her best friend. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to know more, right?
Yes,
you want to know more. And then when they got
how old is the girls?
12 years old.
Yeah.
Right, that's young.
That's yeah,
like sixth grade.
Problematic.
And then when you find out they did it to appease Slender Man, and then they started walking away from the stabbing, leaving their bleeding friend to die.
Yeah.
And they're going to walk like some 265 miles or something to Slender Man's house in the Nicolet National Forest. You want to know more.
Of course.
And this documentary feeds all that. And you get to see the interviews with the parents.
Wow.
Of the two girls.
Where are the girls? Oh, I don't want to give anything away. Where are the girls now?
They're involved.
Okay. That's all I want to know. That's all I want to know.
See artwork from the one girl. And they seem like just normal little fucking kids, you know, middle America, Wisconsin, like little girls. But then they dig. And here's what's interesting. When they do uncover the main girl who did the stabbing, when they do start to talk about like what drove her to do it,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give anything away, but it's like a mental illness, possibly. Okay. It was very interesting.
Have to be.
To be talking about that with somebody. I was sitting next to my wife who's she's got her master's at USC in social work.
That's
and
right.
She had to go through all the training of all the different disorders and whatnot.
Is she up on Slender Man?
Yeah, she knew about Slender Man.
Okay.
I think when she first read the stories, when she first heard about Slender Man. It's a creepy documentary.
Wow.
It's a well-made documentary. It might be a little long. It's close to 2 hours. Right. But it was good. It was a very good documentary. It's worth checking out. Especially if you don't know anything about Slender Man. I think that I was getting a little bit bored of the Slender Man thing. Because I'm like, all right, enough. I know about Slender Man. Stop showing me all these fucking pictures and talking about them. I'm bored. Let's talk about the girls.
I do hope that Tessa doesn't end up into Slender Man. But that said, if she does, I hope she's the one that does the stabbing.
Think Jack Skellington.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I
he
get the
looks
idea.
A little like Jack Skellington. In fact, they actually did a comparison in the documentary. They showed Jack Skellington hanging out with Slender.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got time.
I'm a big Slender.
We got time for one more?
Nah, I don't think so.
No, you want to move on?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it depends. What is it?
Yeah, we don't got time.
What is it? Is it new?
Yeah.
Has it been talked about on the show?
Yeah.
Let's get out of here. Let's move it along.
You were almost there.
It's already been covered on this program. Let's move on.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, next week, huh?
Yeah, just back it up with Oscar movies. But okay, you're right. This is we're not going to cover a lot of ground because I don't have strong thoughts on it. It's one of those movies like, yeah.
Slenderman. See Slenderman? See him there?
Skellington.
There he is. Slenderman.
Coming up next, we're talking about rich characters. Next. Most everything we've got, we don't. So it turns out you really can get everything on Amazon, including something I would be fun if someone like gave it to me, but I don't know if I'd spend money on it. The 23andMe DNA test. I think it tells you like where your ancestry is from, or you were like where what kind of genes you have. Like, oh, you're Eastern European or Western European.
I didn't know you could get that on it because like they got ancestry.com or whatever, but that's pretty sweet. You can get something
DNA test.
Similar on
yeah.
Send them in dog and see what they send back. You know what I mean? Just do a little test.
They're pretty good. Other things purchased on the Amazon banner on AndersonAndBryan.com include, what is this here? Comp Cams Ultra Pro Magnum 3/8 inch stud diameter roller rocker arm for Chevrolet. I wouldn't normally mention that, but it was very expensive. And so
Chevy.
I clicked on it. It looked like a bunch of bolts, but what the hell do I know?
Not much.
Not much. Yeah. Someone got an infant travel bed. This looks like a pack and play, but it's just like a bed. It's like a little bassinet, basically. It's like a pack and play. Smart.
I just got one of those for our last trip.
So smart. A Rokinon 12 millimeter ultra wide angle fixed lens. Is it Rokinon? You know what that is?
You ever heard of
the brand?
About.
I don't know. Plantronics Backbeat wireless noise canceling Wi-Fi hi-fi headphones. Definitive Technology Pro Sub 120 volt speaker. That's a 300 watt subwoofer. Someone got Amazon gift card. It's a girl. Congratulations, whoever got that.
Nice.
Dr. Scholl's Duragel callus remover.
Callus?
Callus. Whoever getting calluses off your feet, I guess. Uh-huh. Is it a gel? Like, do you? No, I don't know.
Hands as well.
Someone got the Bug Assault, like salt.
It's like a gun.
It's a
Toronto has
camouflage
one.
Insect eradication gun.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Eradication.
It's like buckshot.
Yeah, but what do you do with all the salt? You just sweep it up.
Who cares? A little salt on the ground. What do you do? You're outside.
Oh, I assume you did. I'm thinking inside.
You probably like do it inside too. Then you deal with the salt.
Then you paint, and it's a perfect
paint
because you ruined your paint job.
It's not like coming out at such velocity.
It's the wall.
No, taking out windows.
Someone got a raccoon, groundhog, and possum, or stray cat trap. It's one of those ones like a cage that closes. I'm silently correcting your grammar. Ceramic mug. I should get that.
I'm just picturing a redneck just salting their food with these fucking things.
Need salt.
You want some more salt in your corn, son?
Someone got the exact same dresser that I got for Tessa's room, the Souder Shoal Creek dresser. That's a good one for kids. It fits a changing pit table on top. Two people got TurboTax Home and Business, No Tubes tire sealant, billiards cloth. They're going to refelt their refelt the billiards table or pool.
What?
Oh, no! Sneezes! Porter Cable Lithium Drill Impact Driver Combo Kit. Someone got a Nintendo 2DS Electric Blue 2 with Mario Kart 7. And someone got Xbox One 500 gigabyte console, the Halen Collection Bundle. Halo Collection Bundle. Thank you, everyone.
Halo. It's called Halo. Supposed to make a movie. It was Neil Blomkamp was supposed to make that movie.
A lot of movies supposed to happen.
Yeah. I kind of missed the Halo. I think it's a little too late. Actually, you know what? No. It might be working on it right now.
Any movies pushed this week? Any movies?
Here are the movies that are clicked. This is the last time. Sorry. Arrival was clicked. Look at that. Arrival's already arrived. Captain Fantastic. I'm really glad to see that he got a nomination. So that movie gets a little love.
Get a little love.
Hell or High Water. Still surprised that's up for Best Picture. Love it.
Plus
that's a movie that would not be up if we were down to five. You know?
Spread the field.
Murder Party was clicked. Fuck yes. Murder Party. Sunye's first film. The Machinist, as well as 21 Jump Street, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, Blended, Deadpool, Horrible Bosses, Lost Highway, TCM Greatest Classic Films Collection, Horror, House of Wax, 1953, The Haunting, 1963, Freaks, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, 1941, as well as The Campaign, The Third Man, and Zombieland. Thanks for clicking through. Quite a array of different movies, a potpourri of different kinds of films. Eclectic. And now back to the program. Back to the program.
Oh, hi. This is New York Times bestselling author Brian Bishop, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. God, that was a terrible impression. Yep, welcome back. Time now to count down our list of the top five wealthy characters. Rich characters. Filthy rich.
Yeah, what was your criteria, Brian?
They'd have a lot of money.
Good.
A couple of them. Actually, my first two. This is interesting. My first two we're going to get in.
Do you really think it is?
Well, because on your list, how many on your list, it's like family money where there could be more than one rich character, the dad or the son or the dad or the brothers or whatever.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, is this character rich or is the dad rich or is the blah, blah, blah rich?
One of them for sure. That could be the case. The other ones, it's kind of just ambiguous as to how they came in. Some of them.
I did my best to find the net worths of these people. It's hard to do sometimes, but I did my best.
I came across some list where they had a net worth of the people, but I feel like a lot of it was like fan fiction.
Sure.
Like one of them had Jabba the Hutt. Oh, no, I'm sorry if you had that on your list, but they had his
net
worth.
Me,
no. They had his
Jabba
net
the
worth.
Hutt is supposedly very wealthy, but,
yeah, but how do you come up with his net worth?
Hey, that's a good question, especially in that Star Wars universe. Well, because I thought of this today. How does the Star Wars universe, people in the Star Wars universe, how do they tell time? I'm talking about like days, weeks, months, years, because the Earth day is based on the rotation of the sun. Mm-hmm. But obviously there are many, 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 many galaxies in the Star Wars universe, and there are many, many different suns, or no sun at all for some of them. And, yeah, and who knows how long a day is? A day, one day on, right, on Tatooine is 1,000 days on Endor.
Great question, and I'm sure Endor's that many nerds have spent many lonely, sleepless nights discussing it.
There are some planets that have no sun at all, like Geonosis.
Do a little do a little search on your own time and join those message boards. Don't do that here.
Please,
okay?
Please tweet Anderson and let us know.
I will never see it. I will never, ever see it.
Number five.
All right, number five for you.
Go for you, you can go first if you want to.
All right, I'm going strong. I'm starting off strong.
Let's hear it.
Number five for me.
Please whisper.
I already said it. You hear it? You didn't hear it?
That was very quiet.
Number five for me is a character named Colin. This movie is on streaming on Netflix. Mm. It's on Fuckflix. Mm. And it's a character named Colin in a movie called Cheap Thrills.
Cheap
2013.
Thrills.
Cheap Thrills. Colin, played by David Koechner. David Koechner. And Cheap Thrills is it's a dark comedy. When I say dark comedy, it's pretty dark. And it's kind of hard to watch. It gets uncomfortable at times. And it gets... you're a little bit on pins and needles, okay, and concerned about what's coming next, which just means it's a well-directed, yeah, film, too. Here's the story, the long and short of it. It's a very simple story. Guy walks into a bar after losing his job. He doesn't have money to pay rent. He's a dad. He's got a wife, and he's got a young kid, and things are really shitty, and he goes into this bar to have a drink, and then he stumbles into an old friend from high school, mm, right? And the two of them are kind of catching up. And that was what we learn the exposition, and we learn, you know, what's going on with them and back and forth. And then David Koechner. You're familiar with David Koechner, of course, yes. Most people probably know him, Anchorman.
Yeah,
right?
Champ from Anchorman. Whammy!
So David Koechner shows up with a bit of a trophy looking girl named Violet next to him. And he starts talking. He's like that friendly guy that everyone's running to that one time or another in a bar.
He's
right?
An affable fellow.
And you know, he's buying him rounds of drinks. And I believe they go in the bathroom. They do a little tootskies, right? And the guy's getting ready to go home to back to his kid and his wife and explain to her that he can't pay rent and he doesn't have money. Koechner says, you know what? Let's do a little competition. I'll give you $50 to whoever can drink this shot next between you two. Like the guy, mm-hmm, the main guy and his high school friend. So it starts
down
there.
It goes.
It starts there. Ooh. And then it keeps going. For the rest of the fucking movie, yeah, he keeps saying, I'll give you $100 if you go over there and you pick a fight with that bouncer. And you can only imagine just how fucking far it goes, Brian. Sure. It keeps going and going and going, kind of like Trading Places. Like you got to imagine that it was somewhat inspired by Trading Places. But it gets a little hard to watch at times. I don't want to come off like I'm being a bit of a pansy over here. But Cheap Thrills is not the easiest watch.
Okay.
But it's funny, and it's its own thing.
Who else is in it besides Koechner? Anyone recognizable?
Nah, not really. Sarah Paxton plays Violet. And it was directed by a guy named E.L. Katz. And it's streaming on Fuckflix right now. But he is a rich character, and he uses his cash flow, his money, for his own amusement. In fact, I actually used to spend quite a bit of time up in Seattle, and there was a lot of richy types that were hanging around this crew that I was hanging around with, because my best friend is a lawyer up there.
Right.
And most all of his clients were like multimillionaires that would brag about how much. I've been at parties where they're all bragging about how many millions of dollars are being sued by, and they'd Google themselves, almost like Patrick Bateman type stuff. And this one fucking guy, he was the richest of all. He owned the Pamela Anderson tape, sex tape.
Oh.
He was one of the first guys to get into like the webcam girls. Sure. He had a whole like, and he was a real piece of work.
Sure.
And I remember he fucking went over, and it was Seattle, real, real cold. And he offered this homeless guy $100 to jump like off the pier. And the fucking guy did. And he thought it was so funny. Ugh. I was so grossed out.
Did he die?
No, he jumped off
the pier. I don't know how the pier was. I don't know.
It was very cold. And then the guy came and did his money. And he was fucking freezing. I felt awful. I was so ashamed to be a part of that group.
Gross.
Ugh. But it's kind of like that. But it's funny.
It's a funny version of that. Koechner, Colin.
He gets thrown in the fire.
Throw a baby in the fire.
The baby, right in the fire.
Number five for me. Ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to whisper really low. TV Tropes lists, like I said, many, many different types of wealthy characters in movies. Lots of archetypes, lots of tropes. The rich bitch is one of them. Also, the spoiled brat is another one, mm-hmm, and Veruca Salt,
oh,
from Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka.
She would not make
factory.
My list because I don't think of her as rich. I think of her as
a
bitch.
I think growing up, she was how I thought of a lot of rich people.
Like, all right.
Daddy, I want an Oompa Loompa now.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
She's the whiny, spoiled brat. She's a rich bitch.
You're right. Yeah.
I mean, that she fits that archetype. Her dad, Henry, he owns a peanut factory and he employs dozens, if not hundreds of women. They are women. They're factory workers. And he has every single one of them on the floor trying to get her the golden ticket. Remember, the entire factory floor is like, honey, they haven't shelled any peanuts for weeks. Yeah. He's like, you said I'd be the first to get the ticket, Daddy. I'll have the ticket.
And anything you want.
And he goes out there and he's like, listen, he offers them a bonus. If anyone finds the ticket. And of course, they start opening faster. And she gets apparently anything she wants. She's the personification of the spoiled brat. And so Willy Wonka is probably a richer character. Probably if the net worth is probably worth more. But the trope is personified. And plus, she's the only woman on my list. Veruca Salt.
Kind of reminds me of like those Indian kids that go to the spelling bees. And they're rich dads. A lot of Indian kids over here, they got rich dads. And they have like, 3,000. I think it was like 30,000 people back in India praying for them to win.
And tutors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was thinking more of the 30,000 people. The people going through the chocolate bars looking for the golden ticket.
The dad, Henry, at one point, remember, offers Willy Wonka a blank check for one of the golden geese. Like, all right, Wonka, how much for the goose?
Yeah.
It's like, they're not for sale. He's just laughing at
it. Everything's for sale.
Yeah. Everything. That's when he gets the song, I want the world. I want the whole world.
All right, stop it. We've heard enough. But Willy Wonka wasn't about money. It was about invention and experience.
Yeah. Teaching lessons, too. Remember?
Yeah, and being sanctimonious.
Slugworth there. And, you think he was sanctimonious?
At times.
Well, he was a little sappy, but he lived the life.
Yeah, he had the right to be.
Yeah.
He had the right to be.
Anyway, Veruca Salt was the only female on my list.
Number four for me, Brian. This is a character named Terry Valentine. It's a great name for a villain, right? Terry Valentine. Played by Peter Fonda in a little movie that I probably talk too much about, but it's been a few months since I've brought up The Limey. The Limey. I love The Limey.
Christ, I saw this movie and I remember almost nothing about it.
1999's The Limey. Yeah. Steven Soderbergh, a fantastic fucking movie. Damn. Not sure what's wrong with Brian.
I know. I remember liking it. I remember watching it.
Directed by Steven Soderbergh, starring Terrence Stamp. Terrence Stamp.
Is Peter Fonda the guy whose home the party is at the beginning when he goes to L.A. and there's like a big...
Not really big. So Terrence Stamp comes over. He just got out of jail. He knows that his daughter is...
Oh, Christ, is sitting at home. Yes, Terrence Stamp. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's all right. They're very similar.
They are, but that wasn't who it was.
Terrence Stamp comes out to L.A. To find out the disappearance of his daughter. He wants to get to the bottom of it. Where is she? What's going on? She may or may not be dead. And Luis Guzman, who's her friend, is helping him out. So it's Terrence Stamp and Luis Guzman. And they're trying to uncover it. It's almost like a mystery.
Right.
And they come across, they uncover some things, and they find out that she was dating this very powerful record exec. Named Terry Valentine, played by Peter Fonda, who's like got a lot of wealth. Mm-hmm. And he is kind of known for having the power and the wealth and kind of like running his part of town. Yeah. And he's the kind of guy you don't want to really mess with. And he's Peter Fonda he's the mysterious guy. When they finally do track him down, he's Peter Fonda. And it's just, he's got that creepy, like, I have money. I'm a self-made guy and I kind of do what I want.
Peter Fonda has that smile too. That kind of, a little too slick, a little too oily, too good.
And it becomes like a showdown between this Terry Valentine and Terrence Stamp, who's his character's name is Wilson. It's just, it's one of my favorite movies of the last 25 years. Love that movie.
I gotta see it again.
The Limey is just so good. Mickey Katz shows up. He's hilarious.
What year is this from?
1999.
Oh.
Yeah, I wonder if you just kind of choked it down. You weren't really in the mood.
I may have been seeing it under duress. I don't remember. Damn it. I know I saw it, but.
But I believe, it's been a little while. I believe that like they see his house before they actually even see him. And it's his famous house in L.A. where they.
Big overlook of the whole city, right? Hollywood Hills.
The pool goes over and it looks like shark fins or teeth on the sides. Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
Terry Valentine. Rich. Rich from like an entertainment.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, we got a little crossover here. Not the actual person, but my number four is also rich, wealthy of Los Angeles.
That's weird. My last character was rich, too.
A resident of Los Angeles.
Oh,
and yes. You might think of this is another person I probably could have put, could have justified putting Cher Horowitz from Clueless, played by Alicia Silverstone.
She was rich.
She was rich, but you know who was really rich? Her dad.
Her dad was very rich.
Mel Horowitz. This is the money grubbing Jew I was telling you about.
What? Brian.
Dan Hedaya. Dan Adea as Mel Horowitz steals the goddamn show. This is my favorite character. This was the only thing I liked about this movie for a long time, because that movie wasn't, I didn't quite get it. I know what they're trying to say, but all I saw was like Alicia Silverstone and her rich friends doing rich things in Beverly Hills, and I didn't care about. But Mel Horowitz is fantastic. Directed by Amy Heckerling. It's hard to ascertain his net worth, Anderson. He's a highly paid lawyer. Apparently he makes $500 an hour, which is a lot now. And you can imagine how much that was in 1995 dollars. He owns a legit mansion in Beverly Hills. So I'm guessing it's at minimum, just judging from the mansion itself, it's a $15 million mansion.
We have to evaluate as well.
Well, I'm trying to get a rich guy. Trying to get a gauge for how much.
Are you going to buy like a stock in his company?
He's divorced from his second wife. So you think that might hurt?
Oh, maybe that's going to hurt him, yeah.
He's a lawyer. And it's a second wife, so you know they had a prenup. You know that she got
probably
half a mil and sent her down the pike. Mel Horowitz.
His beard line is very high.
Damn
on his face.
I meant to get the clip for Logan, but he has a great line when Christian, the guy, comes over to take a share out on a date. He comes over and he says, "Hey, you." And he comes over, like, you know, when he meets the boyfriend or the suitor, he says, "I got a 45 and a shovel. If anything goes wrong, I got a 45 and a shovel. I doubt you'll be missed." It's good. That's
pretty good.
That's a good line.
You know the line I remember and I'll never forget. And this is a movie I've seen once. And, you know, it was a little bit too like being forced on me plenty of times by friends of mine back in the day. Mm-hmm. But I saw it once. And the one thing I'm always going to remember, Rolling with the Homies, the sad version. That was hilarious. As well as when he's on the phone.
Rolling with the Homies.
And she's like very, very sad talking about it. And then it's Brittany Murphy. And then later he's telling her to get over here. And she's going, "Well, it's going to take a long time." And he says, "It's L.A.
Everything in L.A. takes 20 minutes.
Yeah. And that's so true. Yeah.
Who says who? Everyone. And he hangs up on her.
That was kind of true back then. Like, everything was about 20 minutes away in L.A. Nowadays, it's more about 40, 45 minutes. Sure. Right? All right. Number four for me. We're taking a break here. No, what are we doing?
You did one or two.
I did two now. The Limey, I should also say, if you have HBO Go, you not only get to watch Beware the Slender Man, you can also watch The Limey. You can choke it down over there like Brian did. It's streaming over there.
No, give it the attention it deserves.
89 minutes. 89 minutes.
It is a brisk film.
Very different from my next pick.
Coming up next, Anderson's long pick.
The end of the world was today.
SeatGeek.
Oh, SeatGeek.
We use these guys.
I literally use these guys for a Christmas gift.
How'd that work?
My dad's he's an old school guy. He needs a little bit of arm twisting to come down and visit. You know, he's like, he doesn't want to impose. He's not.
I don't blame
dad. Come down. Yeah, he's like, I'd rather not.
He's like, why would I want to come see what I produce? What I produce?
My offspring.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, dad needs a little arm twisting. So I said, Pops, he's a big USC basketball fan. I said, Pops, I'm buying you USC basketball tickets and plane tickets, and I got the USC tickets.
Oh.
On SeatGeek.
Look at how like powerful you felt.
It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I gave him the tickets. Like, oh, I guess I got to find a flight now. Like, no, you don't.
He had no idea that you got him on SeatGeek. I cut a lot of corners, cut off the middle, man.
It was pretty sweet.
And did it for the most desirable price possible.
It was sweet. I got a great price. I got to see where the seats were. I got to look at a view from the seats.
Yes, they show you the actual view.
It was instant. So you have the choice, obviously, to get like hard copy ones, instant download. I opted for the instant download and I printed them out, did a whole thing for my pops.
Right.
It was awesome. A good price. It was a good seats. Good everything.
Great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So
SeatGeek. You know what? Guys. Right now, too, if you guys want to try out SeatGeek, you go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter code TFV, and SeatGeek will send you a $20 credit after you've made your first ticket purchase.
$20 just for downloading, entering the code TFV. If you get the SeatGeek app, get it today. The app, enter TFV today.
TFV stands for
Tiny the Film Vault.
Yes,
come on, you know
that's
that.
True. Yes. And oh, Brian.
What's that, buddy?
I think that a lot of people know this, actually. Who is famous for growing flowers on the side of a volcano?
Oh, I know this.
Books.
That's what I was going to say.
Books.
That's pretty. It's got to be mineral-rich soil, right? That's got to be why they do it. I imagine the volcano
don't
is pretty.
Don't ask me about the science, Brian. Well, I don't know.
You have a scientific mind from your study of the sea.
I don't know. What was your question? Repeat your question.
The volcano must produce all sorts of mineral-rich soil on the side of that volcano from years of erupting.
It's possible. Yeah, yeah. It might be a little bit acidic, I would think.
I've gotten the Books flowers before for Christmas.
They are good. They are better than their competitors. Let me tell you that.
Let's just say they're excellent.
I don't want to name names.
But they're better.
I've done both. These guys are better.
You know what's better about them is they stay. I will say, from literally the evidence that I have witnessed in person,
they stay fresher longer.
They bloom and they stay fresher longer.
You know what that
longer.
Is? That's the volcanic blood.
Mineral rich volcanic
blood of those flowers keeps them strong.
So where do you go, Anderson?
You know what? I also like that it's called Books.
Books.
Which is like short for bouquet.
It Oh!
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know, hey, honey, you want a book?
How many people didn't know that?
I don't know.
Including me.
Probably a few then.
Go to Books.com. That's like bouquet, B-O-U-Q-S.com. The offer is 20% off your
20%
order.
20% off for listening to us. The code here, guys, is film. F-I-L-M. F-I-L-M.
As film. Film vault.
Film.
20% off at Books.com. Be a hero this Valentine's Day. Save 20% off.
And just be done with it. Oh, and look at this, Briber. It must be that time of year.
As long as we're talking about the big day.
Sherry's berries.
Valentine's Day is tough on everyone, but it's tough on guys when it's what do I get?
An hour-long show with Emily, Sex with Emily, just talking about the pitfalls of Valentine's Day for most guys out there.
Where it can all go wrong.
You know what? When I was a kid, and I'm actually, this is one of the first times I've ever said this, but when I was a kid, Brian, we didn't have Sherry's Berries. We didn't have these like online easy outs.
That's funny you mentioned that because I wanted to send Christy chocolate dipped strawberries for her bachelorette party way back in 2009. Sherry's Berries did not exist to my knowledge back then. How easy would my life have been if they did exist?
So I think a lot of you might know. In case you don't, freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries start at just $19.99 plus shipping or double the berries for just $10 more. Just go to berries.com. Berries.com and use our promo code FilmVault.
That's the whole name of the show.
FilmVault.
FilmVault.
Help support our show by supporting our sponsors. Use code FilmVault.
Yeah, you got double the berries for $10. That's a pretty good deal. Sherry's, it's berries, berries.com. Go now. Click on the microphone, top right hand side, type in FilmVault.
Sherry's berries. And you know what? And then just be done with Valentine's Day. Move on with your life.
There you go. Speaking of moving on, back to the show.
Back to the program.
They made us wait for it.
Wait for it.
More rich people, Anderson.
Yeah.
All dudes from here on out.
Oh, yeah, you only had one, and it was a little girl.
It's Veruca Salt.
Yeah.
Spoiled brat.
All right, you know what? What's I'm that? Switching my order.
Last oh, no.
Minute here. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
Last minute call. Well, your number five ascended to your number one, apparently.
Well, yeah, it's all over the place here, right? But, okay, I'm just going to switch over to this one. It's a less serious pick.
As opposed to our very serious picks?
They're all serious. God damn it. Now,
come on, buddy. Pick one.
All right. I'm just going to go real quick. The man's name is Francis Buxton, Brian.
Yes!
Francis Buxton.
He was on my list of douchey characters.
Not a child, but childlike.
A man-child.
He is from Pee-wee's
Francis.
Big Adventure. Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Oh, there was some choice audio that we could have used for clips here, and I kind of wish that I had. 1985, Tim Burton's debut film, which we just discussed a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
His debut feature. And Francis Buxton was Pee-wee's neighbor,
rival.
Adversary, rival. And
His nemesis.
He had everything that Pee-wee wanted. He lived, grass is always greener, especially in Pee-wee's world because...
Well, Francis Buxton literally was...
Literally. He had an Asian butler.
Yep.
He had a very, very large house. Looked
His
like
dad
an Ivy
was,
League school.
Like, archetype
did
stuffy...
Did you get infused today?
I almost did. His dad was archetype stuffy guy with the ass. Didn't he have an ascot or something? Or like
may
a
have been an
jacket?
Ascot. And he almost to make up for not having top five pool scenes, this scene... Which is a giant bathtub or indoor pool with very large ships that he plays battleship with.
He stages like naval battles in his pool.
Epitome of child. He's like what a little kid thinks of as rich people.
That's a good point.
He's the epitome of the rich.
You're right. When I saw this as a little kid, I was like, oh, that guy's rich.
Yeah.
I get it.
He's like, oh, you don't even have to explain it. You don't really know where his money came from. There's no backstory. It doesn't matter. He has what Pee-wee doesn't.
And he's doughy and fat. And so he's clearly just, you know.
And money can buy everything, and he
never
wants,
goes hungry.
He wants what everyone else around him has as well, even though he has everything. Just like Montgomery Burns said, which he could have easily been on my list because Simpsons was a movie at one point, but that's kind of cheating.
Yeah.
Montgomery Burns once said he'd give it all up for just a little bit more.
Give it all up for just a little bit more. That's good. I forgot about that.
And that's how kind of Francis sees, you know, everything. He knows that the Pee-wee's bike is important. I got to be careful because not everyone sees Pee-wee.
Should you see Pee-wee's Big Adventure, though?
Oh, absolutely. It holds up.
I'm saying if you haven't seen it at this point. Like,
yeah, you should see it.
Okay.
It's Tim Burton doing Tim Burton, like which we all loved. It's Tim Burton before he... wore himself, painted himself into a big eyes corner.
Tell him Large Marge sent you.
It's horrifying, too.
Large Marge was the scariest thing I ever saw for the first 8 years of my life. I was a little sheltered.
And you know what?
That is scary, though.
Pee-wee's Big Top was the sequel, and that's where Benicio del Toro got his start.
I was right. He was the Wolf Boy or something.
Wolfman,
right?
Wolf Boy.
Something like that.
I think that was like his first movie. All right. So, yes, Francis Buxton. Go ahead. Played, where's his name? I don't know.
Oh, it's the guy who was in, he was Chubbs in Teen Wolf. Right? Same actor?
Could be, Brian. I think it is. I think you're probably right. We used to see a lot of him. I looked him up not too long ago, and he has kind of disappeared. He hasn't worked in some time.
Number three for me. I haven't forgot about my mission. I'm taking a little break because I want to make sure we see Oscar.
Mark
movies.
Holton. Sorry, Mark go. Holton.
I will make you see, Anderson, all of the James Bond movies. But by the time this show is over,
you will
see all the James Bond
movies. So excited.
You saw Dr. No. You loved it.
You know that James Bond invented Uber.
Really? How
That's
so?
Where the guy that created Uber got the idea. He was watching Casino Royale.
Oh,
because there's a scene where like,
he's like
stranded on an island and he looks up some thing on app on his Sony Ericsson and then he calls a black car to come get him or some shit.
Good. However,
somebody actually was watching that and they just sold their company and they're like, you know, I need a new moneymaker. Yeah, that's a good idea right there. Yeah. Thanks, James.
Ulrich Goldfinger, Anderson. Ulrich Goldfinger, played by Gert Frobe.
Mm-hmm.
Dubbed by Michael Collins. Gert Frobe was a German actor, Anderson, and they dubbed a German-accented American, I believe, a German accent on this character, even though Gert Frobe himself was German. Goldfinger, 1964, directed by Guy Hamilton. Forbes, Anderson. Forbes comes out with something called the Forbes Fictional 15.
Yes.
Did you come across this in your research?
No.
Oh, well, they do.
I know that they come out with the Fortune 500.
The Fictional 15.
Fortune 500?
Yeah, the Fortune 500. No, Fortune magazine. That's why it's called the Fortune 500. That's the Fortune magazine.
Forbes.
Forbes is a business magazine that does the Forbes Fictional 15.
But Forbes also does the actual. They do the same thing.
Logan, look this up.
Fortune magazine. Yeah.
Ranks 500 companies, and they call it the Fortune 500.
Right. Doesn't Forbes do a list as well?
I'm sure they. I think they do. I think they do a billionaire.
A non-fictional.
I think they do a billionaire list.
Guess who's not on it? Donald.
Trump.
Yes, but he will be after he's
unprecedented.
Yeah, once he's done, like his, they're saying that he might be like top 10 in the world. But right now, he's not. They're saying he's not in the top 100,000 in the world right now.
He might not.
Isn't that crazy?
His wealth is.
But he's building his brand.
Is believed to be exaggerated. Wildly.
Oh, it's wildly. Yeah.
Yes, I believe that Forbes does do a billionaires list. They rank.
Wait, but does Forbes do one?
Christ. Fortune does one also. Forbes does the fictional 15 where they rank fictional characters.
Forbes does?
They, like you said, Smaug. Smaug was number one a couple years ago. Steve Montgomery Burns is on the list.
Smaug, the fucking Smaug, dragon.
The dragon that has gold at the Hobbit. Ulrich Goldfinger was on the list in 2002. His net worth estimated at $1.2 billion. Ulrich Goldfinger is all about gold, Anderson. He is, you know, in Austin Powers. Yes, the Shirley Bassey song. In Austin Powers, gold member. I love gold.
So funny.
That was the takeoff of Ulrich Goldfinger. His whole life is about gold. All he wants to do is gold. He wants everything gold plated.
Yes.
He loves gold. They estimated his net worth $1.2 billion.
Wow. What's he think of gold?
He loves
gold.
He loves gold.
Okay. All right.
Now, let's...
You're marring the two characters.
Gold...
I'm getting confused.
Gold was worth about $300-something an ounce in 1964.
It's not interesting.
Today, it's tripled in value. It's over $1,000 an ounce. So his estimated net worth would be around $6.5 billion today.
That's okay.
Unclear, if, by the way, if 1964 dollars or modern-day dollars. It could be even more for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
He owns a country club.
How will
he owns
find
a private
out, right?
jet. He owns several hotels and fast food establishments. He'd be screwed if the price of gold ever plummeted because he does what investors tell you not to do. He's not diversified. He's all in for gold.
Right.
Which actually was a really smart strategy in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. His net worth really went up.
This is fascinating.
Well, it's fascinating to some people.
Is it?
He's also a legitimate bullion dealer.
Uh-huh. I thought you were going to say Jew.
He's also, no, he's German. I don't believe he, in fact, I think Goldfinger might have been a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Gert Frobe was a Nazi, the actor.
Where's he list rank on the Forbes 500?
Of Nazis?
No, Brian, of rich
What if they rank Nazis every year?
Why is that funny?
It is to be a random thing that
Bill Burr's new special on Netflix.
Ranking Nazis.
Jesus.
Oh.
Yeah, pretty much.
I watched it last night. It was pretty good. It was pretty rough.
I'd seen a lot of it from the New Year's Eve show that I saw almost exactly a year ago now. So it was like a lot of that same jokes, but the monkey stuff was new. Oh my God, was that great. Holy shit. He actually created like a whole, sign language for just Bill for the bit. Probably about 20, maybe 30 different words that he's using on stage for the bit. That lasted about 10 minutes. He's talking about a monkey that reads sign language. He was talking about Coco, but he never actually named the gorilla. But
okay.
All right, Sorry.
You will see Goldfinger at some point. You'll love it.
I've seen Goldfinger when I was a child, and I remember being bored as a child.
Well, it's for God knows, it's for adults.
Maybe that's why. Number three for me. Number two for me. This is a giant, giant movie. I'm talking 201 minutes, Brian.
It's epic.
It is. It's a sweeping epic from 1956. It's considered a Western.
Okay.
And it's giant.
What is it?
Giant.
Once Upon a Time in the West?
It's giant.
Okay. Oh, it's literally giant.
It's giant, Brian. I'm not whispering. It's giant.
It's giant. Was it
called Giant?
James Dean in this?
George Stevens directed Giant, which I love this movie, and I understand that most people will never see it because A, it's from 1956. Mm. B, it's 201 minutes, which is 3 hours and 21 minutes long. However, I try this argument on my wife all the time. Never works. People love to binge shit nowadays.
True.
It's a thing that people do.
You might as well watch a good movie.
This is like, imagine like, let's say that it was, 201. Let's say that it's 10 episodes. Each episode's 20 minutes. Would you like to watch that, guys? Well, why don't you watch that? She's in color.
She's like, pass.
It's in color. Yeah, I tried to deal with silence because I had the silence screener. And I'm like, honey, we got to watch silence. We always binge things. We'll just knock it all out.
It's like binging a movie.
Yeah, it's like, and she's like, no, I'm not doing that.
Wow.
Because she knew too much about it. She's like, I'm not Catholic anymore. I don't want to watch that shit. I'm like, all right. I have to watch it. All right.
I'll be in the other room.
Giant stars James Dean as Jet, Elizabeth Taylor, and Rock Hudson.
Yeah.
And Rock Hudson, his character is Jordan Bick Benedict Jr. And fuck, is this a great movie. It saddens me that it's not, you know, even many of our listeners will never, ever see Giants.
Many of our hosts.
It's not streaming anywhere. I mean, you could pay like $2.99, $3.99 for it, but it's not readily available.
You know what, though? Amortized out per minute, that's one of the best bargains you're ever going to get.
It is. It's like probably a penny a minute, right? Yeah. Less than. Yeah. No, a little more. No, it's like two.
It's 201 minutes. If it was $1.99.
Yeah. You don't want to see the HD, the SD version. But here's what's so impressive with this. And this is, I saw this before Breaking Bad. The story arcs, the character arcs of these characters. It's hard to talk about without giving it away, but most of you are never going to see it anyways. They do this thing where there's like an apex right in the middle of the movie almost where you love James Dean, you love Jet, and you hate Rock Hudson's character, you hate Jordan, you hate Bick, his name's Bick, and middle of the movie, they're almost like neck and neck, end of the movie, complete role reversal.
Really?
And that's so fucking impressive. Yes, George Stevens had 3 hours and 21 minutes to do it, but still, it took five seasons of Breaking Bad to do it with Walter White.
True.
It's a great story. Okay. If you like There Will Be Blood, I know a lot of people don't, but if you do like that kind of storytelling,
I think it's popular.
It's similar. It's kind of a Western. You got it. It's one of James Dean's three movies.
True.
Taylor's looking good in it, and it's just a great, great movie. So the story is this. Jordan Bick Benedict Jr. He's a ranch man. He owns a bunch of land. I inherited it. He owns it. And Jet's one of his ranch hands, right? James Dean's one of his ranch hands. And then James Dean comes into like somebody in his family dies, I think, and he gets a small little plot of land. And Bick keeps trying to buy it from him and trying to get it from him. And he's like, no, man, it's my little plot of land. I'm a simple man. I just want to live here. And Bick's like, no, but I want it. I need to have everything around me, and I got to keep everything intact, and it's part of my legacy. And long story short, Jet, good things happen to Jet because of a little parcel of land. I'll leave it at that because it's a really good story. It moves slow, as you'd imagine, but it's really, really well made giant movie.
It's a giant film.
I brought it up a few times before. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's come up once or twice.
I like that giant. I believe it was up for a bunch of awards, but whatever.
Number two for me.
So is Hacksaw Ridge.
That's a good point. So what does that say? Number two for me, a movie that I wouldn't say came and went. People got, I think it was 90-something on Rotten Tomatoes, and people seemed to like it, but not a lot of staying power for some reason. Ex Machina. Oscar Isaac's character.
He was rich.
Nathan Bateman was exceptionally rich in Ex Machina, directed by Alex Garland. TheTake.com estimates his net worth, Anderson, at $29.8 billion, which is an oddly specific number. It is a lot. He is the CEO, president, owner of Blue Book, which accounts for over 90% of internet searches. It is Google, yet somehow more dominating than Google.
It's fake Google for movies. It's
sort of like if Google was owned by one person. He lives in a house that can only be accessed via helicopter, and he builds perfect female robots with the sole purpose of dancing and having sex with them. It's a real sign of wealth, and you see it a lot in movies when your wealth is so opulent that you're kind of wasting your money. You're spending it on just nothing. Just your money would be much better spent elsewhere.
Brewster
but,
style.
But yeah, you're making robots that can't speak just so you can dance with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Perfect robots, by the way. I'm not talking about like Terminators. Like these are fully functional female robots.
Alicia Vikander robots.
Basically, well, I remember he had a more complete one than it was just the Asian one. He just danced with it. So actually, one of the best. Oh my god! I remember laughing out loud at such a throwaway line in this movie. Remember when Domhnall Gleeson is the guy who goes, and you remember he's the guy from Blue Book, who a programmer who's like he brings to the island or brings to his home, and he's like, "I want you to test this robot out and see any flaws because I think it's great, but I need someone else to test it." And Domhnall Gleeson becomes so like enraptured by the whole thing. He's like, "Listen, I want to stay. I want to work on this. We can." And the whole time, Oscar Isaac's drinking. He's getting ready to dance with the robots, and he's got music playing. It's like I think it's like some disco or something like that, some old song, and Domhnall Gleeson's pleading with him. He's like, "Listen, we can tear up the contract." And Oscar Isaac, "I'm gonna tear up this dance floor."
Yeah, it was an Oscar Isaac I'd never seen.
Oh,
we still didn't know much about Oscar. Like we had seen him as Standard and Drive. I think we'd seen him in a couple other places, but he was kind of like, you know, kind of quiet.
I think this was his
coming out.
This was pre Most Violent Year. I think this was before. This was before Star Wars, Force Awakens.
I'd never seen that side of Oscar Isaac, and
we can tear up the contract. I'm gonna tear up this dance floor. Awesome! I laughed out loud in the theater.
All right, my number one. It's weird going. Before,
oh, we're gonna break.
Oh, we are. That's right.
Quick break. I'll be back with number one in a moment. Oh, man.
You know, I've been told not to have favorites.
You know, is this just between you and me, though?
Blue Apron.
Yeah.
My favorite.
This really could not come at a better time in your and my life, our lives.
Our
specifically,
lives, yes.
Because of, I'll say the kid definitely makes free time and time to do things like make a meal a little more difficult.
A little more difficult. So that's me time. That's my time. And you know what? It's hard to get away sometimes. And to just look at the wife and say, "Look, honey, I need to be here. I want to be here. But right now I'm going to go out and I'm going to go in the kitchen and I'm going to make food.
I'm going to produce something
like
for all of us
something.
To enjoy.
Yeah, I'm not going to the bar. I'm not going to hang out with my friends. I'm hanging out with me
as
in the kitchen.
Like to.
And I'm learning how to cook a new meal that I've never cooked before. And that's guaranteed. With Blue Apron, you're going to be cooking something. Never repeat a recipe within the same year.
And here's something I think most people don't know if they never tried Blue Apron. And maybe some people who have tried don't know it. People think, "Oh, they send me three meals. What if I don't like one of them? What if it sucks?" You can go on and customize every week's order. I think you can choose from six items to make your six meals
right.
to make your three meal box.
Like if you don't eat pork, like I decided not to eat pork because I think pigs are cute. So I don't eat pork. I let them know. They never send me pork.
They always have a vegetarian option. They always have two, I think. With a fish and a meat. It's great. Go to blueapron.com/TFV. You get your first. Oh, they're doing three meals free now. Three meals free.
They were doing that before too.
I'm trying to sell it.
Okay.
With free shipping, go to blueapron.com/TFV. That's blueapron.com/TFV.
Zip.
Ah, Zip.
Recruiter. Zip Recruiter.
Hiring people's hard. Just get, I mean, like, forget about even getting to the interview process. Like, just getting the word out.
I'm doing auditions right now for groupers, right? And I understand how important it is to pick the right people for those roles because I'm going to have to be working with them on a daily basis.
How many people
I can't imagine what it would be like to have to be picking people that I'm going to be working with 9 to 5, 8 hour days. It's really important. So what you got to do is you got to see the most amount of people. And that's where ZipRecruiter comes in. They help you because they post on multiple job sites.
That's a good point. How many, I was listening to you talk about it on a different podcast. Yeah. How many people applied for the,
I got well over 15, I think probably close to 1600 different people submitted for the various roles and groupers. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And but that's what you want. You want a giant pool. You
yes. Don't, cast you know, that wide net.
And that's what ZipRecruiter, that's where they come in. So you're not just posting to one or two sites. You're making sure the cast is as the net is as wide as possible.
There you go. So post on ZipRecruiter for free, free, no cost. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/first, all spelled out, F-I-R-S-T. That's ZipRecruiter.com/first. One more time for free. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/first.
First. Brian, you and I are proud owners of Movement watches.
I'm proud owner of several.
I know. You would love to brag about that.
I really like them.
I can come right back with saying I now have two myself.
I have three.
I have two.
I really do. I have three movement watches.
I'm well aware. I don't know why you are so proud of that.
It's a real bragging point in my life.
But they are great watches. They're great really watches. Are. And you know what? I don't know. I feel like this is a power move, but I keep mine in my desk. In my desk. So like when it's time, when I'm going out and I got something kind of nice on it, I pull the drawer out of the desk and I take it out of the case.
Yes.
I take it out of the case and I go, which one am I going to wear tonight?
It's like an unboxing. It's like,
They got great looking watches that look like, you know, $400-$600 watches. Mm-hmm. And they start at what, $95?
$95 is where they start. I start coordinating them with my outfits. Like I got the black leather strap for, you know, casual mm-hmm. night. I got the black, same one as you, the black link strap.
Yeah, you got the exact same one as me. The gunmetal. I was very upset when I saw, I'll take the same one that Anderson's getting.
Whatever he gets, I want.
And I was really upset. And then I'm like, oh, wait, we're never going to go out together, so it's okay.
It's like the time I copied you.
Can you imagine if we showed up to our Film Vault event and we both had matching movement watches? No.
Are we going to your Groupers night? Groupers night! I'm wearing my watch. I'm wearing all my watches just in case.
Movement watches are very fancy. They're very good looking. They're heavy. They're well constructed and they're affordable. And right now, Brian.
Mm-hmm. 15% off? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, 15% off. You go over. Where do you go? Free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com. That's MVMT. They got rid of the old vowel, the pesky vowels
the pesky
over there.
Vowels are
MVT, MVMT watches. movementwatches.com/TFV.
15% off is nothing
Especially when they start as low as $95. Free shipping. Do the math, guys, because I can't. I don't know what that turns
out
to be.
Almost $15.
It's not a lot of money. You're not going to be spending a lot of money on this watch, and you're going to be looking great.
So check it out, movementwatches.com/TFV.
Yep.
Going to number one for each of us. Reach. Is your number one your wealthiest? I try to go in order of wealth.
I feel like we discussed this at the very top of the program.
We discussed not getting...
They embody wealth. That's how
of your five, I'm saying. Who's the wealthiest over here?
You know, I didn't spend a lot of time doing research on what these people may have...
If you had to estimate the net worth.
It's really... I mean, it's a different era.
Probably not the Western guy, because he's his...
Especially by the end. He owns... I don't know, Brian. Like, how do you compare any of the four that I just have, like... Terry Valentine, he's a big, powerful record exec who might be smuggling drugs as well for a little side cash.
He has one of the nicest homes in all of Los Angeles.
How do you compare him to Francis Buxton?
I don't fucking know. He's staging military battles in his bathtub.
And then you got David Koechner in a bar, having some cheap thrills. Yeah,
he just has money.
Tons of money.
You
do go back to his place, and it's not that opulent. But yeah. I think that's because and cheap thrills, but I think that's because the movie didn't have a ton of money to actually rent out a giant mansion.
Yeah, and he fills the category of rich character. That's what he does.
Yeah, that's all my characters do is the rich characters.
It's persona. All right, number one for you.
So is your number one like the richest of rich?
His wealth is incalculable.
It's kind of like all of mine that we just discussed.
No, I mean, I don't think there'd be any way to realistically...
There's not a calculator that goes up that high?
No, it's more like... You'll see. It's not a fantasy land, number one but it's hard to ascertain.
Number one for me. It's short. It's simple. It's sweet. It's Mr. Hudsucker.
There you go.
Mr. Hudsucker.
Paul Newman, right?
No.
What? No?
No. Mr. Hudsucker. Do you remember Hudsucker's Proxy Brother?
Yeah. I like that movie. Oh, like the head of the board, the head of the company. I thought Paul Newman was the head of the company. Was he just the boss of the department?
Well, Brian, the very open of... Can I talk about it openly? Yes. Especially the opening scene, the opening sequence. Played by Charles Durning.
Ah, yeah, the old
Mr.
guy.
Hudsucker. They have a big board meeting.
Yeah, you're right.
It's my number one pick. I better be
You
right.
should know
Oh,
this.
You're right. Yeah. You know what? It was Paul Newman.
This thing you researched all day?
Mr. Hudsucker. is about to have a meeting. Everything's so sterile. So symmetrical and perfect. And they're all in there with their white jowls and their timepieces and their three-piece suits. And they're all sitting up and down, all the old white wealth. They're waiting for the head of the company to come and deliver some, I'm sure, snooze fest of a speech. Mm-hmm. And Darning just does it perfectly. He just embodies, like, you know, rich white man of that time. It's kind of like a timeless period.
You know,
but you're thinking like the 50s.
For
probably a hula hoop had not been invented yet. Right. So you're thinking around the 50s. A wholesome era where the machine at the top was very easy to identify,
right.
And it was Mr. Tropy. Hudsucker, very tropey, yes. And they're all the I'm in my head a little bit because I got now two emails from people yelling at me for being hating white people so much. So I'm trying not to talk about. But all these old white gentlemen.
Sure. You're talking about specific people, not just white people.
And they're all sitting there just waiting characters. For Mr. Hudsucker to talk. Right. And he takes out his timepiece and he puts it on the table and he steps up on his chair and he steps up on at the end of this very long conference room desk. And he begins running, right? As the clocks are on 10 seconds to midnight and 10 seconds to noon, right? Everything's symmetrical and perfect and clean. And he just starts running towards the end of the long table there towards the window. And then he leaps out.
He does.
And right as the clock is chiming, it's a beautiful shot. And he's soaring down, peaceful, serene. He's not like in ecstasy or anything, but he's himself.
He's
almost
calm.
Like a man would if he's diving from a high dive, right? You're not looking death in the face, and you're not exactly jubilant. You're just doing what you're doing, which is letting the laws of gravity take place. And my favorite is when he's just about to splat. Like he sees this woman, and like I think she might have a baby carriage, or she's holding her daughter or something. And he kind of like tries to move her out of, like with his hand. He kind of like move out of the way, and then he misses her by a few feet and splat. Oh, Mr. Hudsucker, you are what I think of when I think of Time Warner, AT&T, all these horrible fucking companies that just gouge and nickel and dime the good man every day.
Can I tell you something?
They're all Mr. Hudsuckers in my little pea brain fucking us. That's what I see.
Time Warner CEO.
And God, it was so satisfying watching him jump to his death.
Time Warner CEO is a black woman.
Times have changed.
It actually might not be true, but I just wanted to challenge you on that.
Thanks. I was actually happy for a second.
For a second, did you reevaluate your stance?
I was very happy. As long as she wasn't put there because straight out of Compton didn't get nominated for an award last year.
That's why you think literally a Fortune 500 company would install a...
See what I'm saying, though? Like, yeah, I like that. Like, it because...
like, you know what, guys? There's a real injustice
so
in the
subjective
world.
With fucking art. It's just hard, especially, you know.
That's funny. Does he come back as a ghost in that movie? Like, or is that his only scene?
It's his only scene.
Okay. For some reason, I thought he came back.
No, there is a ridiculous fight scene at the end of it, which involves a custodian and a... The end scene is just... That's why the movie is not thought of fondly.
There's some great stuff in that movie, but there is also some silly stuff.
Speaking of the Coen brothers, if the Coen brothers had done, nothing against Stephen Frears, but if they had done Florence Foster Jenkins, it would have been quite a bit better. It felt like a Coen brothers movie.
Hey,
it did.
See if you're on board with this, this theory.
No, I don't like it. I don't think it's true either.
You know how back in the day, and I don't think this happens anymore because record contracts aren't what they were, but... bands or artists would release like kind of throwaway albums just to fulfill contracts. You know, like, oh, they owe one more.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what Hail Caesar was.
That's right.
We talked about that.
Did we talk about
on the show?
Oh,
yeah.
I have no recollection.
Like
they were
fulfilling a contract. That's what it felt like. I don't know if that's true.
I feel like,
but it felt like
the last couple of Coen Brothers movies, like even Inside Llewyn Davis, just felt like, kind of like, all right.
Didn't feel like a passion project.
Get it out there. Get it out there.
We'll do one. And we'll have some fun doing it. But,
okay. I forgot that we had talked about that. I had that notion when I was looking at the Oscars or nomination. I think Hail Caesar was up for costume design or something. And I was like, ugh, goddamn that movie.
Please don't use the Lords.
Number one for me.
Especially
one
after seeing Hacksaw. I think you find a new appreciation.
That's a good point. I don't want to touch a microphone ever again. I'm a conscientious objector.
Oh, is that like your Bible?
Yeah,
your microphone?
Right. That's my rifle.
Ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It's my weapon.
It is a weapon. It's assaulting many people's ears on a weekly basis.
This is how I slay people with laughter.
So fucking stupid. So dumb.
Number one.
He looks to Logan. Logan's just stone-faced.
Logan laughed already. Number one. Okay. Very hard to calculate.
We heard. Incalculable.
Very difficult. TheTake.com did a list and estimated Prince Akeem's worth at 650 billion Zamunda pounds.
I'm glad you have him on your list.
Eddie Murphy.
Almost made my list.
Eddie Murphy, Prince Akeem, Coming to America.
Yes.
Directed by John Landis, Coming to America in 1988.
Coming to America.
How on earth could you, first of all you know is that he has everything at his disposal. For example, he's a prince, as far as we can tell, an only child, so he stands to inherit the entirety of his royal fortune. His face is on a 100-pound bill, for God's sake. One example, when he wakes up, his morning routine, Anderson, he wakes up, servants everywhere. Servants are turning to his every need.
Right.
At one point, he says to his like main servant, he's like, hey, it's my birthday. How about just this once I wipe my own ass? And, you know, and I was like, nah, that's very funny, sir. Mm-hmm. Wipers! And he calls out the royal wipers. Like, literally, Eddie Murphy as Prince Akeem cannot do anything for himself.
Right.
We cut to him, speaking of large bathtubs, we cut to him in a pool, which is the royal bathtub, and he's getting bathed by topless, beautiful, gorgeous women in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting bathed, and he looks bored, and all of a sudden, one pops up from under the water and says, the royal penis is clean.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, he's bored with his wealth. Right. He's so wealthy, so opulent, it's boring.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing.
He has dedicated, gorgeous, female, topless servants to just washing his genitals.
Right.
That's wealth. That is incalculable wealth.
You probably would like that.
What?
You probably would.
No?
Yeah, I think you
would. Why would you
say that? You're like that guy. You would enjoy that.
Listen.
Not important.
Would I like to?
It's that old
would
tale.
I like to give it a shot? It's, just to know if I liked it or not? Sure.
You know why I would not like to be rich? Mm. And if I had a bunch of stuff, I think the idea of death and all of it going away and everything ending would be that much more awful.
Because you were enjoying yourself so much?
Yeah, I finally have like freedom from the man. Yeah. I can do what I want. I can do, you know, I have my own autonomy and I can. And then it's all just going to go away like in a blink of an eye?
But
fuck
you'd be leaving Atticus with a nice setup, a nice life.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, seriously. Prince Akeem.
I want him to work for his money. Okay, good. Good one. Yeah, that was definitely on my list. Let's hear the listeners list.
Yeah, listener top five.
It was on my also rans. I'm glad that you have it there, Bri.
All right, well, tied for fifth place, we have Jordan Belfort from The Wolf of Wall Street.
He's such a dick.
Yes. Unlikable.
Yeah, but it's not like all our characters were likable.
Also have
Veruca Salt, the worst.
The Dukes from Trading Places.
They are rich.
Both of them. I like
make an appearance in Coming to America.
Makes sense.
Make a cameo. Cameo.
Number four, we have Richie Rich, played by Macaulay Culkin.
Mm-hmm.
Mortimer, we're back.
It would have been better if he got stung by bees.
A robo bee.
Start crossing over.
Reference the movie. Number three, we have Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, easily I would have liked to put him on, but my criteria was like that was the journey of him becoming rich.
True.
And how it changed him.
He started off a very blue-collar guy.
Yep.
Number two, Tony Stark from the Iron Man movies.
No.
Just very wealthy.
One of the lists that I found, like they had like all the top wealthiest people, and majority of them were like Marvel comic characters.
Oh, one thing I'm
all over the place. And it's just, you know, I understand that.
One thing I tried to avoid, and I think you probably did. Well, you definitely did.
Fantasy.
Yes. And I hate.
Don't pronounce it like that.
Yes. Not only that, but
no,
I hate conveniently rich. Like rich, that's just for the sake of the plot. Like, well, he needs this thing, so he's rich and he can have it. He needs this thing. I like
Bruce Wayne.
I like when the wealth either complicates the story or makes the story more interesting. Like for Prince Akeem, obviously he goes to America and pretends to be poor. Or for Oscar Isaac's character, it makes his life much more mysterious. You know what I mean?
I think it makes him a more interesting superhero that he's a famous millionaire.
I agree with the first part.
And you know
I do
what?
Agree that the fact that he's out in the open with his he doesn't have a secret identity. You know?
But well,
he
what you're saying, that kind of falls true for Oscar Isaac's character in Ex Machina. It's kind of just convenient that he's got all this money so that he can try all these things with robots.
Right, but he isolates himself, so he makes it more of a mysterious, he's the antagonist of the story.
And then further to Tony Stark being rich is that he's the head of a weapons corporation, and so a lot of his struggle as a character is his guilt.
That's
with
a
that.
Good point. I think that was more a proxy to my rule. Tony Stark is a good character and a good choice, listeners. It was more of a proxy to my rule of I tried not to just do rich for this.
I think the Black Panther character, which they're making a movie now, he's like the richest of all the comic book characters, apparently.
I don't know that.
I read that somewhere.
The movie's not out yet. I don't know a lot about it.
Apparently, he has the most money.
Probably has a diamond mine in Sierra Leone.
Yeah,
he's African.
I don't have any interest. Oh, that's a good point. I don't have any interest in Cape Crusaders and billionaires for fantasy sake, colorful pages.
Well, speaking of.
Tired of it. It's probably Bruce Wayne.
Right? Bruce Wayne.
The number one rich character as voted on by our listeners is Bruce Wayne.
He is rich.
He's very rich.
You know, if we're gonna go with a
that's rich for the sake of being rich, though.
Mm. I will counter that with a Patrick Bateman.
Yeah, good call. Right? Definitely. He's also very rich. I have a long list of also rans. I don't know how to even.
I almost had Noah Cross from Chinatown, Brian.
I almost had Biff Tannen.
Master Bates, Brian. What's from that? The toy. The kid.
Oh, wow. That would have been a deep pull.
Same, kind of the same realm. Billy Madison.
How many votes did
Rich little fucker.
Charles.
But his dad was.
He did Mr. Deeds. He did so many rich characters.
True.
How did Charles Foster Kane get a lot of votes, Logan, for the listener list?
No, I didn't see one.
Really?
What?
Wow. Citizen Kane?
One of the all-time rich.
Oh, you know what? I did see one for Citizen Kane.
I would think so.
Dudley Moore and Arthur?
Gordon Gekko, Bri?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Archetype. Mm-hmm.
The Great Gatsby?
How do you say his name? Khalidan Nathan Hockley? Titanic? Billy Zane's character?
Christ, I don't know how you say his name.
Rich prick. He lives. He's up on the top floor. He's got the suite.
That's right.
Whereas poor old little Leo has to be. He's down where they keep the animals.
Steerage. I was very close to putting Ozymandias from Watchmen on there, but I talk about Watchmen too much. But these,
see, another fucking comic book.
I know.
Les Grossman, Brian. He's rich and powerful.
Yes, he is.
Tropic Thunder, Tom Cruise.
John Hammond from Jurassic Park.
That's all I got. Yeah, he is very. Brewster from Brewster's Millions, but like, you know, he's inheriting the money and he's a poor guy becoming rich.
Syndrome from The Incredibles. No animated characters.
Oh, wait. Jeremy Irons in Margin Call.
Oh, yeah. Well, all those characters are rich.
They're all rich, but he was the richest of rich. Right. He was the all-powerful.
Yep. Sam Jackson in Kingsman. So many good ones. Dr. Evil, of course. I should have put Biff Tannen on there.
Future Biff.
The Big Lebowski.
I saw him on one of the lists when I was researching.
Future Biff?
It was just Future Biff, yep. Yeah. Because there's so many different iterations of Biff. Right. Some not so rich.
Some not so rich.
Some watch Marty's car.
A very meager means. All right. What now?
I leave.
It's gamble.
Oh.
All right, last week you gambled on A Dog's Purpose. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 38%. Anderson bid 31% and Brian 39%. Now, currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for A Dog's Purpose has gone down to 34%, making Anderson the winner.
Oh, very close. Well, it's been a while, buddy. You snapped a streak. You're back. You all right? Deep breath.
Just do it, dude.
What? What are we doing?
Serbian film.
Oh, bore the Oscars? I have so many movies I have to watch. I will.
Serbian film.
Oh man, lame. Do you have it on you?
How do I
find this movie?
Oh, you know what? I do have to do a little research to make sure you see the actual uncut version.
Asshole. All right, assign me an Oscar movie, and then I'll watch that at some point.
Nocturnal Animals.
Oh, good call. How do I find that one?
Yeah, that's a good point. You might not be able to because they got rid of most of the dollar theaters now, right? And if you can't do Nocturnal Animals, I'll assign you something else.
No, I do want to see that though. No, look at my just.
All right, let's move on again.
Logan, you do your thing.
You figure it out. All right, what are you doing? Oh no, just watch.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no tomato scores on there.
No tomato scores on
here.
Well, actually,
Brian.
Oh wait, knock.
Brian.
Nocturne.
All right, let's go. I got to roll. I'm already.
That's what you're gambling on. Rings.
Oh, it looks so good. Brian, come on.
Nocturnal Animals doesn't even show up. Oh, boy, that's not good.
I'll figure it out after we do this.
That's bad news. Rings? Oh, yeah. Boy. Oh, fucking A.
If it's not, you know what?
Rings. Rings. Ah, fucking dog shit. Don't let me see.
Did you see?
No, that's why I held my hand up.
Rings.
All right, what's your number?
Did you see?
No, I can't see anything.
I wrote 95 down.
No, you did not.
As a red hair.
Oh. That's funny.
95. 17.
Ooh, we're close. I said 22.
Ah, shit. I hate when that happens.
Currently, the week before its release, Rings has
so much more. Zero.
Zero reviews.
Do you think it's going to be over 50?
No, but you just have a much bigger scale to work with now. When we both go real low,
but
you're like,
most of those numbers are useless. Nothing over 40 is going to be. 95.
Hey, if it's 95, I win.
That's a good. I'd give it to you.
All right. You know what? Here, we'll do this right here, right now. Nocturnal Animals. If you can't find it, if it is in that weird
number.
Little.
What? We got to hear the number.
Zero reviews.
Zero.
No
Rotten
Tomatoes score.
Okay, sorry.
You missed that. If Nocturnal Animals is no longer
available.
It's
a good sign, by the way.
Anywhere. Giant.
Giant?
Yeah.
You asshole.
You know what? You were really
please,
great last
please
week.
Please let me watch Serbian film, please.
You were really great last week with assigning both of us something. Oh, wait. It's playing places, you idiot.
Please let me watch Serbian film.
It's playing Arclight Santa Monica.
Oh, it's right down the street.
Playing Cedar Valley. Arclight Hollywood.
Hey.
Very few showings, though.
I'll find it.
So figure out what's more convenient for you. Either all right. We'll do that later. But either that or watch the giant movie.
900. Okay, hold on a second. What happened? Where did the Logan's thing go? Who's the listener up by this week? Scott W. Thank you, Scott W. Let me take a look at this.
Anderson, you're not going to like this one.
Mm-hmm. What's going on? What? Why would they do that to me? That's fucking Brian as Yolandi on the Ninja DM word cover. Why would you do that to me?
Probably to upset you. Where's Anderson? Is he like buried or something?
I'm not even in it. It's just Brian.
It'd be awesome if you were like buried, like your face is sticking out of the dirt.
Very dark, Brian. I don't know why you take it to such a dark place.
Maybe he's the ninja.
Maybe. Oh, what up, my ninja? Thank you, Scott W., for making that and sending it in. We appreciate the effort. AndersonBrian.com is where you go to see it. Check out all of our featured artists over there. The Coalition. This is for this week. You updated this week. The Coalition, Lovers and Poets, Dead Cat Hat, Scott K. and the Continentals, War Eye, Candy Cigarettes, FM Pilots, and A House for Lions.
And everybody, two things real quick. Listener, let me know that... oh, yes, you were correct with the...
Woo!
With the Dark Knight thing, and sure enough, the explosions did not go off quite like they were supposed to.
Okay.
He had a friend who was actually working on the set, and he came home, couldn't wait to tell him the whole story. So the camera operator stayed true on it, and it was great. Heath Ledger to actually stay in character and have fun with it. Also, what was I else going to say? Brian, I had something else that I had
to hear
say.
It.
It was important, too. It'll have to wait till next week, I guess. Hey, sorry, I got to go.
Come on, bro.
We do it for Van Gogh. It's like a mirror of my stubborn will, hollowed out, burning still. There's a key under